are live, ladles and jelly spoons. That's amazing. I sorted everything out and I forgot that my jack in the iPad didn't work. So I've got to plug my phone in. There you go. So welcome to Tim's channel. It was supposed to be on Yuliana's channel, but she had a, not an emergency, but something came up. And she said, Tim, can you take over quick and we'll sort it all out? And I said, yeah, no problem. And then I set everything up and it all went to go in a hat basket. There you go. But this, my friends, is Balcony Banter. And there we go. We're back in the room. We've got Ian Miller and a beautiful sunset. How the devil are you, Ian?
Fine, thank you. How are you doing out there?
Cool dudes, we're doing fine. Where am I going to get the... I'm going to get the comments on this one, and I'll get the band on that one. There you go. So, ladies and gentlemen, what we're doing today is... I'm doing an impromptu here, and I thought, well, a lot of people have been asking me, what did you do before? And I said I'm an executive, and I sort of lied a little bit. You know, I wasn't an executive, but I was a senior member of staff, but... I'll let you into that. So what I thought was, is I interview people. And then I thought, well, why don't I ask Ian to do the same to me? So today, Ian, my friend, is going to interview me. I'm going to take the sunset offline for a second. There you go. So it's just me and Ian, or Ian and I, as we say. And I'll be reading the comments as well. And I'm just going to say who's on. It's Jeff, it's Craig. Norgetil Spania, the BB's on the channel today. It says, it is on this channel. Tonight's show's on Tim's channel. There you go. Everybody's confused, same as us. Tim on Tuesday, walked, you said you'd be on the channel tonight. Silly you, it was at that time. But just the situations have changed, as they say, the situations have changed. I'm going to move that light like that and move a little bit further away. There you go. Be with you shortly, says Ian, that's fine. Okay, everybody came on. Ray's on, hi Basil, late again. Well, I was on time, in fact I was 4 minutes early, and then the audio didn't work. The rest, as they say, is history. Roger Channing's on, good evening, you're coming over soon. Jack Bell, Vinnie M, Pete Shell, Denise Pearson, we'll be meeting tomorrow, Denise. Dominic's on, hi Tim, hope you're well, me and Angela and Cal. Cala Onda, Spain, and I used to be an executor. There you go. There you go. Not an executive. An executor. Michael's on. Hi, Michael. You passed could, so interesting, tell it all. I think I should, yes. Hello from Windy San Juan, said Richard Walton. Hey, Richard. Welcome back to the island. I've got nobody to walk with this week, so if you fancy a walk, let me know. Or if you're over for a few weeks, then next week, let me know. Any day but Friday. Friday, I've got a doctor's appointment in the morning. So any day but Friday. Cheers, everybody. I found this in Mercadona. It's called Doble Malta. And it tastes like a Bock beer from Germany. It's 33 cl and... What? Oh. Don't tell Chris.
All right.
I'm not saying it, just in case she's listening.
No comment.
No comment. I thought I was on a roll. I've had one already. On my second day. Yeah. Doubly, 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 doubly. Sounds windy, there's it. It's been terribly windy today. In fact, it was perfect weather to go and do that drone thing I was going to do. But obviously the wind wouldn't let me do it. You know, you've got to, when you do your pre-flight checks, you've got to go to this website and it tells you what the wind's like and everything in every part of wherever you are. It's very good, actually. And it says I'm not allowed to fly, so.
Well, you've got to do what
that's the end of that. Say again?
You've got to do what the machine tells you.
You've got to do what the machine tells you, exactly.
All right.
There you go. So we're in, as you can see, I'm in the shadow bit here. The sun is,
something happened there. You're blowing about.
I'm blowing about, Ian. So, Ian, what's happened since last week for you first?
Oh, it's been a week of two steps forward and one step back.
Oh, dear.
Ah, exactly. Oh, dear. The heating went off. My heating went off.
Oh, dear.
I'm all electric, so we got up one more and it was nice and cool. I got that repaired eventually. Managed to do that myself, that's no problem. I snapped my adjusting knob on the camera tripod, so the camera tripod is stuck in one position now.
Is it a position you can use at least?
Yes, it is, and with a wee bit friendly persuasion, you can get it to turn to what you want it, you know?
Okay, sure.
And then, thinking my troubles were all over, the latch on the window stuck solid. So, that was my week up to date.
The Luftstoßen, as they say in Germany. In Germany, when it's minus 20 degrees, they open all the windows to change the air in the rooms, you know? They call it Stoßluft. Right. Stoß is like to push, and Luften is to aerate. So it's like a massive aerate. So if you're cold, not wet, open all the doors and it makes you feel good. I've just got to reply to two of these things. Richard said, how about tomorrow morning? I can do tomorrow morning. 9 o'clock in the square in San Juan. If that's okay. And if anything changes after this, I'll let you know tonight if anything changes after this. But I think tomorrow's no problem because it's Thursday, isn't it? Yeah, Thursday. Okay, and Tina Rigby, thank you so much for all your support. I did message you privately, and also thanks you on a reply on your thing. But it's nice to be able to talk to you and say thank you for all your support there. Yeah. And Michael McGuinness, you're saying wine was about the alcohol volume of your beer when I first started to drink it. Wine is gradually getting stronger. I noticed, funnily enough, that when I'm shopping and there's three types of people. There's the type of person that's looking at what does this wine go with. So they're looking at the food thing, you know. And there's some people that are looking at the year and, you know, the connoisseurs, the real connoisseurs. But most of the Brits, they're saying, have this one, it's 14%. Have this one. Yeah, so they don't even care where it comes from, how old it is. As long as it's got the most alcohol content. And I thought that was funny. Yeah. That was funny. But then again, I'm the one buying the beer with 7.4. By volume, though, there you go. So 7.4 by volume. It's not 7.4% alcohol in the team. Anyway. So it is now 18:08. You might have noticed that Julianne is not here. She couldn't make it tonight, and it was supposed to be on her channel because it's her week. But she's asked me if I could change. So basically, it's a shift change, isn't it, Ian?
It's a shift change, and we'll work out the next few things. Yeah, one or two things sure in the did. Pipeline, so we'll work it out.
So I'm just going to put the sunset back on. I'll put the sunset in the middle, how's that, so you can look at it.
Yeah, I just noticed as well, you're up to 7K as well for your subs.
I never actually mention that until I get to 7,100 because it fluctuates.
All right.
So if I say 7K, then tomorrow morning I'll have 6.9 again. So, but thank you very much for the 7,000th. In fact, they only show me the names of the subscribers if your YouTube channel is set to public subscriptions. So if you've subscribed to the channel but you keep everything sort of tight, then I don't see that you've subscribed as a name. I see that person, that amount of people subscribe, but I can't tell who the 7,000th was. But I do go through once in a while and have a look and thank everybody. Richard say 9 square in the square. Perfect. Perfect is like perfect without a P, but there you go. And Ray Duffy says, was director with bus company Tim. Stand at terminal and point this way and that way, and you're bust. Hand pink wave. It doesn't. This software doesn't show the emoji, unfortunately. Thanks, Imran. Yeah. Okay, I wasn't sure because I used to be able to email people back when they got me on the system that you did, and but now it just gives me the option to message. It doesn't give me the option to do that. Daz R is on. Over in 2 weeks, first time. Costa Adeki, greetings from Warwickshire. Okay, Daz R. Hope you've done your homework and you've gone through all my videos about Costa Adeki. And you've done all your homework looking at Andrew and the MacMaster, the Crackmaster, and Rick and Shelley, who are going on. They're not going live. They're doing a premiere at 7 o'clock. So what I've done, this live stream will actually send you all over. So when I finish this live stream, it'll actually recommend Rick and Shelley's channel. So just keep watching. Keep watching. There you go. David Banner. Hello, David and Ian on silent. Hi, Tim, Christina and Ian on silent. Rob says he was the managing director of Shitstiles. And Pask C says, hi Tim, finally able to catch a mic. Pask C, thank you so much. Is that what I'm saying? Pask C.
Is the wind getting up? It is.
I hope it's. The sound's not too bad. I've got
it's
me.
It's not
I've got
too bad, but just now and again you're getting the wind coming in.
Okay. That's mainly because the wind's from the back of the microphone and it's going underneath the thing. But it really is blowing again, as you can see from the cylinder cap.
Yep.
The cylinder cap.
Quite strong, yeah.
Dominic has just retired, and you always give brilliant advice. What's the top one or two things? Hi, Tim, I've just retired, and you always give brilliant advice. What's your top one or two things? My top one or two things for people who retire is get a job. It doesn't have to be paid work, but it's got to be something that gets you up in the morning and keeps you going. I think the best thing you can do is, I think it was either last week or the week before or the week before that, Ian did a good one about retirement on Balcony Banter. So two or three Balcony Banters ago, go and check that out with Ian. But I think that's the first thing. The second thing is, and it's just my personal view, is change your life completely. You know, do a total mind switch and do some, if you can, move house and start a new life. Because these days, you know, you're a long time retired. Yeah. You could have another 20, 30 years, you know. And you imagine from when you were like 10 to when you were 40, you know, that was a long time. And if you change house now or change your, you know, move island or, you know, do something drastic, then you get another life.
Yeah. But one thing I will say, I'd add on to that, is if you're going to change, make sure it's something that you really, really want to do, something that you've got your heart in. It makes life an awful lot easier.
That's true.
You know, no point of saying, I'm going to change. I'm going to wait to do this. But if you've got a doubt about what you're going to do, then do it. You must be committed to what you want to change to and how you want to take your life forward, you know.
Exactly.
It makes it simple. And it's an awful lot easier to handle, I find, anyway. I've got something that I like doing. And it keeps me happy. It keeps me motivated all the time.
Like drinking yourself to death.
Yeah, I like drinking myself to death. I like dark water. I like dark water. nothing like it.
Ray Duffy, thank you for the super sticker there.
There you go. Just curiosity killed the cat here, actually. I've been going back on a lot of your old... videos. And you probably put me right on this one. It was a way back. It's the first one that I can find. It's MS Physio in the Pool. It's 5 years ago. In and Christine going into the pool.
Uh-huh.
Was that the first video ever that you did, that you made live?
No, what happened was I've had this channel for quite a while. And I had a channel before that just timmed out. So I've got another channel that I don't use anymore. And so when I came here, I wanted to do something different. And I was working as a magician, so I didn't really have a lot of time. And then when I stopped working as a magician, which was around about 5 years ago, I started the YouTube channel. And so I deleted everything that was before that and just started with the introduction, I think, was one of them, and the pool, I think, was one of them.
Yeah, that's right.
So if you go back far enough, you'll only get the ones that are to do with living with MS in Tenerife. You won't get the ones that I did for Fit by 50 and then Fit by 55 and then Fit by 60. These are all the failed weight loss things, you know.
Oh, right. There's another one that I saw was the wheelchair bonanza one. I saw that as well.
I like that one. Yeah. I think I've got that somewhere. I can actually show it, but I've got to get it on the computer. I can't do it on the iPad and stuff. Yeah.
The reason I brought these two up. The last time that we were in Tenerife, you did something to me at the meetup.
Oh.
So I just thought, see, it's just you and me tonight. I'll turn the table on you.
Okay.
quick question for you. This was probably before near the end of your time working. You worked with Siemens.
I did, yes, I did.
What were they actually producing? I know you get traffic lights, me, control boxes and everything, the Siemens on this side, right? Okay. So what did they actually produce?
I was in charge of designing the kettles for the tea.
All right.
Siemens is a massive company. I mean, it really is massive.
Yeah.
And it employs a lot of people in every country in the world. And they had certain divisions, so that they've got like the discrete circuits division that builds things like power stations for countries, you know.
Yeah.
And they have the appliances division, which was just a way of getting into America. You know, they had Siemens kettles and Siemens cookers and fridges and stuff.
All right.
And that was just a way of getting into America and getting the name Siemens. But I joined them in 1989 in Germany. And it was Siemens Halbleiter, which is translated to Siemens Semiconductor. And they just built this factory in Regensburg about 4 or 5 years beforehand. And they were developing the first DRAMs, so the computer memory chips. So they were doing DRAM, and it was the first factory in the world to produce a 1 meg memory chip. I know it sounds stupid now, but
you know,
1 meg of memory then was, in 1989, was a lot of memory, you know. What was the famous saying of Bill Gates? 640 kilobytes enough for anybody or something like that. I've got to say hi to Webby. Boom. And I've got to say, Tim, do you ever watch any of your old videos? I do, actually. I download them and show them to you when I've got nothing else to say. Aaron Fraser's got home. He was on the south of England all day.
Cheers, Alan.
Listening in the car. Oh, he's not home yet. Okay.
No, he's just crossed the border into Scotland. Oh, well.
Oh, just listen.
Welcome home, Alan.
Yeah, so he's driving. So what have we got to say if he's driving? Watch out!
Yeah.
Yeah, so I was working for Siemens up until 1999, and they sent me to America in 97. And then in 1999, they said, oh, we're going to float the semiconductor business on the stock market. So that meant it was I wasn't Siemens anymore. So they changed it then to Infineon Technologies.
Right.
Which is still alive today. It's an $11 billion company with 50,000 employees worldwide.
Yeah, they built server units, because I know what I was involved in. Mm-hmm. We used to get a lot of server units in with the Siemens stamp on them.
Uh-huh.
That was mainly in the large project that we did. We did one for Alliance in Leicester, and we had our two comms rooms, and they were all, you know, cabinets, just rows and rows and rows and rows of cabinets, with the gear and everything like that. And a lot of the stuff that came in was stamped Siemens, you know.
Well, Siemens, they did the discretes as well, which was basically the it's basically hardware to do with electronics. The semiconductor industry was a totally silicon-based division.
Right.
So our division was only developing stuff on a chip. And we were in the DRAM business in Regensburg, but we also did like things like picture-in-picture and systems on a chip and stuff like that. And eventually we got to the stage where they were making bespoke chips where you would only create a certain amount for a certain customer. And they were really expensive.
So somebody's asking for a 473 bus.
Yep, 473 gets here from Los Cristianos or from Los Gigantes. You can get it from either way. And get off in Chaos Avaji.
Yeah.
At the bottom of the hill, just past Nebula, as it goes round the roundabout, left, get off there, and then walk downhill to the beach. And have a walk around. Here on Friday, I'm out and about on Freaky Friday. So if you come in the afternoon, 5:55, you'll probably find me out somewhere in a bar. Yeah.
There's for someone, a change. someone asking there. Den diddy dem. Would it be right to say that you did a lot of hospital equipment, for example, scanners and things like that?
I think Siemens did go to that, but that was more into this discrete. So, as I said, it's on the division I was in, it was totally silicon-based. So we didn't create any hardware at all, apart from the chip. So I'll come to that in a minute, what my actual job was there, because I had a few jobs there.
When you actually started, did you obviously you go through a training program? Was it like an apprenticeship or something like that? And like, what was your first job?
My first job, you know, my apprenticeship has been. I left school at 15, so that was in 1975. I was 15 years old. No, I'm sorry, sorry. I left school at 16, sorry. I left school at 16. I mentally left school at 15. But in 1976, I was 16, and I was in the secondary school in Bury called the Wellington, which doesn't exist anymore. It went to a college, and now it's a block of flats, I think. But it doesn't exist anymore. At the end of Parliament Street, if you know, it's in between Market Street and Parliament Street. That big plot of land there was the Wellington Secondary Modern School. And I went there, and then I was so intelligent, I didn't have to listen to the teachers. All the lessons bored me because I could get things like that. You know, I was really so intelligent. That's why I ended up at secondary school and not grammar school, you see, because I didn't listen to them telling me what I needed to do for the 11 plus for them. So 1977, I got a job in a garage pumping petrol. I thought, I'll be a millionaire soon, Rodney. And And then I was selling bespoke suits in a Welsh... I moved to Wales after that. Oh, no, I've forgotten one job. I was a stock control clerk for Scaffa Yarns in Jericho in Bury. So I was a... This is funny, actually, because I was what they would call now a manufacturing execution system. So the MES, which is the manufacturing execution system, in a factory, if you've got certain stages that a product goes through to get manufactured, then you've got to sort of schedule time on tool number one, tool number two, tool number three, and you've got to put it through a certain factory thing. And I was doing that, and it was basically just number punching. So it was a yarn mill. So we get the raw yarn in.
Yeah.
And I'd have to count how many bales came in of what product. It was either Y-Wax, you know, Y-Wax is Axminster. Yellow, white, Axminster, Y-Wax.
Yep.
Or if it was totally man-made or whatever, you know, nylon or whatever. And so I'd jump on the bales in the warehouse and count them all, and that would be my intake. And then I'd schedule, based on what they needed to produce, I'd schedule all the machines, you see. So I'll put that amount of kilos in here and that amount. And I'd have this thing on the wall with all the machines at the top and all the processors at the bottom, and I'd move little cards along. That was fun. I did that for 6 months. And then my mum and dad moved to Wales and said, you can come if you like. So I went down to Wales and got a job with, what was it called? It was a tool manufacturer called CK Tools, or Seeker, C-E-K-A, I think you might have seen it.
Yeah.
They also did the Abus lock, the A-B-U-S, Abus padlocks. Mm. German company up in Wuppertal. And... their European distribution centre was in North Wales, in Bethlehem.
For them, in the warehouse, sending out orders, picking orders. That was fun because I was in this tunnel with shelves floor to ceiling, and I had this machine that would go up and down, forwards and backwards, and I would just go and pick. You know, like what computers do now. That was me. So first of all, I was an MES. And then I was an auto picker for that. I fell out with them, though. I fell out with them because I didn't like the boss. And I went to work for Quicksave.
I'm still waiting for this apprenticeship with Siemens. I'm interested in this.
Well, the thing was, the apprenticeship with Siemens... Let me just finish the arc.
Yeah,
okay?
On.
Okay, finish the arc. So after Quicksave, I decided I wanted to be my own boss. So I started a firm, Tim Dowd Enterprises, Rodney.
Oh, right.
And I went as a market trader, and I was selling jewellery or gold-coloured chains, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got involved with this guy who was doing good jewellery, and he sent me out on the markets and he paid me a wage. And then he didn't want to do the market trading anymore because he sold it to another guy who was a bit posher. And he said, I don't want my jewellery being sold on the market. So he gave me my first golden handshake. He gave me the market stall, £100, and said, go and find a product. And so I wrote to this, you know, you get the adverts on the back of Superman comics, you know, jokes and tricks, snap-its and disappearing ink and all that, fart powder. And so I bought a big box of that, and I went on the markets as the Joker. And then I went and I couldn't live on that, so I was selling bespoke suits in Carnarvon at Geogriffiths, and I couldn't earn enough money on that. I ended up being a furniture salesman in Times Furnishings. It was actually Cavendish Woodhouse at the beginning, but the Times took them over, and at the end of that, I was driving home one night after a five-a-side. I'd had two shandies, and this guy reversed out on a Welsh road in the middle of the night right into me. And I got done drunk driving.
Oh.
Although I wasn't drunk. I still claim to this day I wasn't drunk. And what happened was, he took me in the house and he gave me a brandy to calm my nerves.
Right.
And all I had was two shandies.
Right.
But, as you know, the rest is history.
The brandy was too much, he says.
I got with the shandies. Yeah, but I mean, the brandy I drank after the accident, so it shouldn't have counted. So I had to do something else. So I went to college. I went to Newey Deeside College and learnt computer studies in an HND. It wasn't even a degree, HND. And at the end of it, they had lots of money left over from the European Union Comet Scheme, I think it was called. It was a little bit like Erasmus, but for people who'd finished college, called Comet. And they'd pay for you to spend 6 months in a foreign country working. And so I chose Bavaria and I chose Siemens. So basically I was paid by Comet Scheme and Siemens for 6 months to go and do this, let's call it a practicum. So this is now what you're calling an apprenticeship.
Right.
I did a practicum with Siemens. So all at the end of it, the end of 6 months, they said, do you want to stay on? Because one of the guys I was working with, he was working shifts in the computer center, and he was a computer operator. And in them days, a computer operator was the guy that changed the paper out in the printer. And I don't mean the printer that you print stuff out on. PCs didn't exist then. This was like a mainframe computer, and it didn't have a. It was a PDP 11 from a VAX PDP 11, and it had like disks, like 18-inch disks or 12-inch disks, I think they were, in an array, and you had to change those out, and then it would actually, what's the word? Before we go any further, can you see the, what's it called? The,
sunset?
No, not the sunset, next to it.
Yes, it's the sun. Oh, what's that? Oh.
It's a whirlwind. A tornado. Can you see it?
What is it? Right there, here. There, right, that's it, right there.
Oh, wow. All
right. Right.
You saw it here first, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
We'll go live and we'll get 50,000 followers now.
It's just moving along, moving across there.
Moving to the left, yeah?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's it.
That's not going to say anything. No. Well, that was cool.
Is it whipping up the water?
It was.
It will be. Look at the sunset you've got there. Look at that. That's a
beautiful, isn't it? Beautiful. The sun's going down off the coast of La Gomera now, so it'll actually go down behind El Hierro. So that'll be quite good to see.
Yep.
So basically, that was how I got into Siemens. A guy was going to the army, and his job became vacant. And he said, "Do you want a job for 18 months while he's in the army?" I said, "Yeah." And then they changed the law that you only had to stay 6 months in the army. So after 6 months, he came back and took my job. And a mate of mine he actually gave me the practicum. In the practicum 6 months, I became a C programmer. So I was programming man-machine interfaces for machines.
Right.
So I think the first thing I programmed was I cut the cable between a keyboard and a controller, and I had to read the bits and bytes of this keyboard, you know, the machine code, if you like. And then what I did is when the operator typed in new lot to process something, and they type in the lot number, then my program would go to the database, get the recipe for the lot number and send it back and automatically type the recipe for that lot number into the screen. So they wouldn't have to, do it. And that was very important, really, because when you're processing silicon, it's done in layers. So if you destroy a chip or a wafer, if you like, at the first layer, then you're only destroying, let's say, $10,000. But if you do it at the fifth layer or the sixth layer, you're destroying like $50,000. So there was a lot of chips on a wafer. There were only 6-inch wafers at the time, but my programs then saved a lot of money, which wasn't my. I mean, I didn't think of it. They just told me to do the job, but they wanted to save money by stopping people doing and making mistakes. So that was basically, I was at the bleeding edge of the technology.
Right.
So when you're asking, did I do an apprenticeship? I actually was at the right place at the right time, where I was two steps behind the guys developing the system.
Yeah.
And so they came up with this man-machine interface for all these semiconductor stuff. In fact, they were trying to define a standard, semiconductor equipment communication standard. And they'd done standard one, which was the low-level handshaking, machine code stuff. Mm-hmm. And they were just about to develop level two. And I was at the right place at the right time, because I was automating all the stuff in the factory in Regensburg. There was another guy doing it in Villach at the same time, Rudy, and we got together, and we were de facto experts in the field. So SEMI, which was a multinational think tank, invited us over to San Francisco to give a talk. And I became famous because I was the guy that says, you know what, all your standards and stuff, nobody's going to do it because it's too expensive, and they're going to interpret your standard, and they're not going to do it. And people didn't believe me, and I said, they're just not going to do it. It's they're trying to sell hardware, and they're not going to invest in software, and they didn't. Canon, for instance, you know the camera people?
Yeah.
They make steppers. Now, a stepper is basically a glorified camera, but it's $5 million. Right. And what it does, it takes a reticle, which is like a silhouette of an electric circuit, and it shines through like X-rays or I-beams or some sort of stupid light, and that goes onto a silicon wafer, which has been treated with a photoresist, and once it's photographed, it goes in, and then it gets polished and etched away, and it builds up the layers, right? And Canon, our company, bought an interface. They wanted an RS-242 interface. 242?
Yeah.
I can't remember now.
Someone like that,
it was a big 25-pin thing like the Wood Dream. They bought it for $50,000, and it came, and there was no software behind it. So we bought a plug for $50,000 on this $5 million camera. And so I said, look, we've got to do something. We've got to do a tool operation scenario, which I started writing together with Rudy and a couple of other guys. And eventually we told the manufacturers of the machines that were creating the microchips what we wanted for automation stuff. And because I was like a dog with a bone, they had to do it, because we weren't going to give them $5 million for the next stepper until they'd done this. And then Semi came back and...
I'm going to interrupt you there. The sun has just hit the water behind you in the sunset. I was watching it coming down. And it's just this minute hit the water.
The sun. The sun is actually just above the cloud. The clouds on the right and left, the sun is actually still above that.
It's still above the... I can see it. It's just looking at it from where I am, it's just like the shadow has actually just touched the water.
It has.
Aye.
Oh, that's cool. It's good. It's just going to go behind the cloud for a second, and then it's going to come out again. It's got another like 15 or 20 minutes to go. I think sundown tonight is 18:50.
We're not getting them at night. We're getting them in the morning. Hey, this last few mornings, it's been bright red sky every morning, you know.
Red sky in the morning, shepherd's warning, as they say.
something like that. Aye, yeah.
Michael's just asked, from the life experiences, what advice would you give to your 21-year-old self? I've already said that, I think, on a few occasions. Don't take yourself as serious as I did. And you are expendable. I think, I'll even go further than that. You're insignificant.
Yeah.
You're insignificant. People don't think about you half as often as you think they do.
Yeah, well.
Yep. Yeah, so that was fun, actually. I was actually on the bleeding edge of this thing, which basically, when we opened the factory in Dresden, they said we wanted to send me to Dresden because they wanted to move the manufacturing automation up to Dresden. And the wife says, I don't want my daughter growing up with a Dresden accent.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a bad accent, but it's like being a Londoner and then growing up, your kid grows up with a Geordie accent or something like that. You know, it's just totally different. It's totally different.
Yeah.
So it's not a bad accent. It's just really broad. Totally not the same. So I didn't go to Dresden, and my boss went to Dresden, and he was disappointed, really. So then after that, I was sort of floating. And then this one guy that I met, Dr. Helmut Buchner, hi, Helmut, if you're watching, and his wife Cindy from Singapore, hi, Cindy. They knew something I didn't, that the Siemens were going to open a factory in America. But in the meantime, they were building one in Newcastle.
Yeah.
And so they built the one in Newcastle, and they fitted it out. And as the PCs came in the front door, they were being thrown out the back door.
Oh, usually.
And so there was a big problem with shrinkage over there. And then Motorola came in and said, we want to do a joint venture with you in Richmond, Virginia. And Siemens says, oh, we're still doing Newcastle, but we're having problems. The Queen came and opened it.
Right.
But it wasn't open. So the machines weren't in, but the building was there, and the HEPA filters were there, and everything was clean. So the clean room was done. The PCs were coming in and going out like soft mick. And so Motorola said to Siemens, close it. And Siemens had never closed a factory before. They'd opened it before, ever. You know, Siemens were like, you know, we can't do that. You know, we've promised, and the Queen's been and all that, you know. And Motorola said, no, close it. And if you don't close it and put the money into the Virginia joint venture, then we're not going to do it. So Siemens closed. So I was going to go to Newcastle as well, but I didn't want to go because it wasn't Manchester.
Yeah. Did you ever come across or have any dealings with the Hyundai side? We got involved in a big new factory just in Dunfermline. It was being built, and this was to make a new generation of chips, just what you were talking about there, the layers and layers and chips. It got to the stage that they had the clean room ready, and the next week that we came in, the factory was closed.
Who was that? Who was building that?
Hyundai,
the car manufacturer.
Aye, yeah, but this was for manufacturing chips.
Uh-huh.
Everything was in its place. The machinery was coming in every day, and the clean room and that had just been sealed. And then the next thing we heard, the factory was no longer going to open. And that was it. I just wondered if, you know,
that was nothing to do with us, but it was probably a similar thing. It was probably a similar reason.
It was just you mentioned round about the 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This was 95 was the Newcastle one.
Right. Yeah.
So 89 I started. So it must have been between 93 and 95. The Newcastle one, and then Richmond opened. Well, they didn't open, but I got the job in 97.
Right, yeah, yeah, yeah. Just just curious. It's I think
no, Hyundai Thompson was another one, the French company. They were doing it. Motorola was doing it.
They came in to take over the building, but they didn't last long. It never ever came to fruit at all.
So Silicon Hills never happened.
It never happened there. We've got an
Ali Betty said all the talk of chips is making me hungry. is Anne back from the dentist?
I don't know. I've never seen that there.
She's got an abscess. Tell her not to fart because it'll just go Honda. Because you know the saying, don't you? An abscess makes the fart go Honda. We're not doing dad jokes tonight.
Save them for the next time.
On the island as well. Hi, Marie. Photos from today's trip on the community page on YouTube later.
All right.
So Marie's on the island. Life experience, we did that one. Okay, I was just going back on to see if I've missed something on the thing.
I'm just having a wee look at them there.
So basically what I did before coming to Tenerife is I actually made my name at this semiconductor equipment communications thing. And then I went to America to build the factory. Well, I didn't build the factory, but the factory was being built. And they wanted to start first silicon with connected telemetry, so connected machines, measurement machines.
Right.
And that was never done before, ever.
Yeah.
And Reynolds Metals, which is like Alcan foil, like the American version of Alcan. Yeah. They had a factory in Richmond that had closed down, and a lot of engineers were out of work. And so we took a load of those engineers, about five or six of these engineers, and we got a couple of other people from Motorola coming up. And they said, "What do we do?" And I said, "Well, we're going to automate this factory. We're going to automate the factory." And they said, "Okay, we can do that. What do I need to do?" So I said, "Well, here's the standard semiconductor equipment communication standard. This half of the book is data collection, and this half of the book is control. Door open, door close, start, stop, spin, whatever." And so I portioned it out and said, "Right, let's do. We'll build a simulation that simulates data being sent from a machine in line with the standard, and we'll build a side where we're controlling the machine with standard comments, start, stop, up, down, open door, closed door, and stuff like that." And so I built the middle bit, and they were talking to it all, and it was quite fun. And then so we had a simulation built in SexSim Pro, which was a PC-based software that used a language called Tickle, tool control language. You wrote the stuff in Tickle, and it interpreted it. It wasn't a compiled computer language, so you could actually change stuff and then run it immediately. It was quite fun. So we were basically glorified hackers at the time.
Just we have a drink there. Can I say welcome, Dane Duffus from Aberdeen? Nice to see you in the chat, Dane. Thanks for your emails.
Hey, Dane, I've got your emails as well. You're out in the garden with your dad, and I enjoy those. If I don't reply immediately, don't worry. I will reply eventually. But that's the best way to get hold of me. But it's nice to see you in the chat, Dane. Very good.
Yeah, very good. Very good. Thank you.
Yeah, so basically I wrote this thing. And then what we did is we sent the engineers all over the world to the manufacturers of machines. And they plugged the simulator into the machine to see if it was standard interface. And none of them were, obviously. So my engineers, they came back with a discrepancy report. And the discrepancy report was what's the difference between the standard and what the machine actually does. And then we either told them to fix it or we worked around it. depending on how much the thing was. Yeah. But that was a really good, because the buyers had a lever. If you're not TOS compliant, tool operation scenario compliant, we get 20% off. And if you're not TOS 2 compliant, then we get 40% off. So they were actually negotiating for a worse interface than I wanted, because they were going to get cheaper. So no. They said it's cheaper to pay you to work around it than for them to fix it.
For them to fix it. Oh, well, there you are.
So basically, it was quite good. It was quite good. So it was. I made my name there.
Right.
And the thing was, people couldn't understand what my engineers were saying. Then the sales guys couldn't understand it. Then the people who were using the machines couldn't understand each other. So I eventually started talking in between them. Right. And I had this affinity to be able to talk at any level, at any sort of like knowledge level, if you like.
Right.
So I wouldn't go into details with the sales guys, and I would stick to the details and no politics with the engineers. And the scientists just got data, you know. And so this guy called Rainer Misali noticed me and said, this guy can talk to all levels, so I want him as a communication guy. So that's when I went into the communication business instead of the software business.
Right.
And that's when I became a senior business analyst, because Siemens or Infineon as well at the time, they had these levels where you could only grow in the business if you had people reporting to you. But there were a lot of people that were not manager material. I mean, I think I'm a leader material, but I'm not a middle manager. I can't manage people. And I even went on a couple of courses and I thought, that's not for me, you know. I'm not an idiot, basically. So I can lead people by example, or I think I can give people sort of like, I can lead people, but I can't manage people.
Yeah, you can show them the road, but it's up to them to follow it.
Yeah, I think I can, you know, people do what they want to do anyway, so just bring the best out in them, you know. Whereas a manager has to tell them what to do, when to do, how to do it, you know. Yep. And if you're a micromanager, you got to tell them the little bits, you know. And that wasn't for me. They invented this career path called individual contributor. So I became an individual contributor, which meant was that every time I wanted a promotion, I had to invent a new job. And I always invented jobs I enjoyed doing, like doing videos or doing we had this chat function. I think it was a Microsoft system where we could have this closed chat. It was like corporate chat. They said, why do we want corporate chat? We want people working, not chatting.
Yeah.
So what I did is I went round and I did a presentation, which I can't remember the presentation now, but at the time it was very good. But it was basically, can you imagine? Engineer wakes up in Singapore. It's 2 o'clock in the morning in Germany, and he's got a problem. And so he just sends out into the chat to his peer group, I've got a problem with XYZ. And then German guy comes online at 8 o'clock in the morning, 7 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
He sees it. He says, oh, I know something about that, but I'm not sure about it. And he passes it on to our American colleagues in the evening. Yeah. And all of a sudden, now we have done 3 days' work in 24 hours.
Right.
And it sold it, you know, it sold it. So they implemented this chat. Of course, they ended up sending pictures of cats to each other. But.
I'm going to interrupt you there, actually, as the sun is just disappearing. I can see there.
That's, oh, yes.
Yeah, that's been good tonight.
You will actually see the sun in a minute coming out between the top cloud and the middle cloud.
Right.
And but I think we might miss it because we've got to finish, because Rick and Shelley are going to be on at 7 o'clock. And if we don't finish before 7 o'clock, it won't redirect them.
Yeah. Right. That's no problem at all. That's very interesting, that time. Very interesting. I've got a lot more here, actually, that I'll spring on you some night.
We've got content for another 10 episodes, Ian.
Yeah, where's Christine?
You know, she excused herself.
Oh.
She says, if you're going to talk about yourself, I've heard it all before. Tell everybody I love them. I'm going to watch TV. So she's watching TV.
I'll save Christine for the next episode then.
Okay, okay. We've done a couple with Chris, but she's quite happy to answer questions.
No, I think we'll leave. We'll draw a line under that one there, and I'll say many thanks for that. Like,
thank you.
Thoroughly enjoyed it. It was just a get your own back on you.
Yeah, the thing is, I love talking about myself. It's the only thing I know about.
Well, that's something like myself, actually, when you get going. It's something that you've, if you've been in your sort of your life span and you've enjoyed what you've done, it's quite easy to go into it. And I think I'm like yourself, I can go into the nuts, bolts and washers of it as well.
Definitely. So do you have a thought of the day that you could say off the top of your head?
No, off the top of my head, but I've got three wee comments here. It's from my gratitude journaling.
Okay.
It's a daily practice which brings true happiness. It's questions. What are you thankful for today? What strength are you thankful for? What do you love about your best friend? What everyday object are you grateful for? What vacation memory brings you the most joy? Over to you.
Well, my strength is 7.4. The best thing about my best friend is his fantastic Dundee Scottish accent. And I can't remember the rest. Oh, my vacation. I'm on a permanent vacation.
You're on a permanent vacation.
I'm on a permanent vacation. Yeah. Right, I'm going to have to finish it here, Ian.
Yep. Now you're on 57, okay. So.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to thank Ian for coming in today and grilling me and listening to all my twaddle. I'd like to thank you guys for coming in and listening to all my twaddle. I think twaddles are what we need in life sometimes. Don't forget, go over to Rick and Shelley's channel and watch their premiere. It's not a live, I don't think, but it's a premiere. So you can chat to them in the chat. And this will actually automatically send you over there when I press the end button. So, ladies and gentlemen, this is Tim and Ian and the Sunset for Living with MS in Tenerife, Balcony Banter, saying a goodbye. See ya. Wouldn't wanna be ya.